Today's reading is Psalm 90 on page 599 of your Pew Bible. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn men back to dust, saying, "Return to dust, O sons of men." For 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. You sweep men away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning, though in the morning it springs up new, by evening it is dry and withered. We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. The length of our days is 70 years, or 80 if we have the strength. Yet your span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For your wrath is as great as the fear that is due to you. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Relent, O Lord, how long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to your children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest upon us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands.
Amen. So tell me, what do these people have in common? They're singers with a song. Sam Bailey, you heard Sam Bailey? She won the 2013 X Factor, and she had a song called Skyscraper. Steve Brookstein, he won X Factor in 2004. Had a hit with a song called Against All Odds. Or what about St. Winifred's School Choir singing There's No One Quite Like Grandma? Or what about Ricky Valance singing Tell Laura I Love Her? Or what about Anita Ward singing You Can Ring My Bell, Ring My Bell? Or J.J. Barrie, No Charge? What do all those people have in common? Sorry? Any from the back? They were one-hit wonders. So I bet you knew that. Oh, yeah, I knew that. Well, why didn't you say it? There's no point in not saying it. That was the only hit they ever had. And there's lots of people like that. One-hit wonder. In a sense, this psalm is written by a man, and it was his one-hit wonder. It was written by Moses. And it's the only psalm in the Psalter that is attributed to Moses. David wrote many of them. Other people wrote many of them. But Moses is given this one and only. And yet to think of him as a one-hit wonder is a bit doing him down, because Moses contributed the most to the Bible in a volume kind of way, because he wrote Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the five books of Moses, he wrote those. So he contributed in many ways, but according to the Psalms, he was a one-hit wonder, but what a one-hit wonder it was. And as we read this psalm, I want us to think about the life of Moses, because everybody writes out of something, or maybe something they know, or something they've experienced. And you know the life of Moses, it was a very special one. God had chosen him. He was hidden in a basket, you remember, so that he wouldn't die, and he was taken in by an Egyptian princess, and he spent the first 40 years of his life as an Egyptian prince with all the privilege that brought. But his heart was for his people, the Jews, the Hebrews. You know how he killed an Egyptian who was abusing one of the Hebrews. He went on the run. He was a wanted man. And for 40 years, he was in the wilderness as a shepherd until God spoke to him out of a burning bush and said, Moses, I've got a job for you to do. And it was going to be an amazing job to go back to Egypt and to set the people free. Many, many people who had been crying out to God. It was going to be a difficult story. It was going to be a difficult journey. But it was going to be a glorious one as he lived out God's purpose for his life. And we read about it and we rejoice in it. We see what a kind of God this is. So I want you to think about those kind of things that Moses experienced as he is writing this psalm, this prayer, this song. But he starts off with a lovely line, Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Verse 1. If you have your Bible open, it would be really good to follow it, just so you can see it. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. If someone asked you, where do you live? Now, I don't know this area very well, but I know where I come from in Belfast. If someone says to someone, where do you live? And they say, oh, I come from the Falls Road or the Shanker Road. It says so much about them because it tells you about their religious heritage, Catholic, Protestant. Probably tells you something of their socioeconomic status. Probably poorer and probably working class if you talk about those areas. Whereas if you say, I come from the Malone Road, or come from Cherry Valley in East Belfast, which is where I come from. Well, East Belfast I come from, not Cherry Valley. Cherry Valley is the nice place to come from. But as soon as you say that, it says something about who you are, about the education you have, about the background, about the job you do. Just saying about where you live says so much about you. You'll know the equivalent of Wicklow. But Moses says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place. You are where we live. Because a Christian doesn't want to be identified with a piece of geography, but wants to be identified in a relationship, a special relationship with God. Lord, you have been our dwelling place. From the time God called Abraham and said, Abraham, I want you to leave this place and go to a land that I'm going to show you. He had nowhere to rest. He was constantly on the move. He thought he was going to a promised land. Ultimately, the promised land was going to be where God is. For God was his resting place, and every generation found that the Lord himself was their resting place. Not a piece of geography, not a piece of ground, but God himself was their resting place, their dwelling place, their refuge. And didn't Jesus himself say when someone said, I want to follow you? And he said, why do you want to do that? I don't have a house. I don't have anywhere to live. I've got nowhere to lay my head. And so it is with all those who follow Jesus. Our resting place is not in a physical place, but in him. And he is the best place of all, because look at the kind of place or kind of God he was. Verse 2. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Before the mountains were brought forth, or you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. God created all things, everything we see, the whole cosmos he created. But before it was created, he was there. He has always been. He has no beginning. He has no end. He is from everlasting to everlasting. He simply is. Nor is he a God that, back in these days, people had many gods. There was the God who brought the rain. There was the God who made the crops grow. There was the God of this little area and that little area. When you moved from one territory to another, there was a different God of that place. That is how they saw gods. But this God created everything. The whole world is his. The whole cosmos is his. This is the kind of God that Moses said, you have been our dwelling place for all generations. Verse 4, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it's past, or like a watch in the night. This God is not even subject to time. He created time. He is almighty. And Moses said, Lord, you have been our dwelling place through all generations. But in contrast to the bigness, the eternalness of God, immortal, invisible, in contrast to that, Moses thinks about people like us who are very different. God's nature is eternal. Our lives, by contrast, are very brief. I was going to put up a picture of the mayfly, and I was going to say about how Alan Foster goes off fishing. Don't you, Alan? Oh, it's a great year for fishing. But mayflies have a very, as one biologist described it, the most miserable existence possible. They're kind of in the water doing their thing, and then they spring forth for a day-ish. And they mate, and they die. And that's what one biologist described it. It's the most miserable existence you can imagine. But as Moses thinks about humanity, he is saying the same thing. It is the most miserable existence you can imagine because it is so short. Verse 3, you turn us back to dust and say, turn back, you mortals. This is a clear allusion to Genesis chapter 3. When God had warned Adam and Eve about the consequences of sin, that they would die, that they would return to dust because we're made of dust. This is our mortality. Verse 5, you sweep them away, they're like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed, in the evening it fades and withers. The Bible is full of vivid metaphors for the brevity of life. Things like a morning mist. I remember one morning, because the weather's been lovely here, the sun, but I looked out one morning, there was a bit of mist. But in no time at all, the sun had just burnt it off and it was gone. Or there's a light shower and the ground is wet. Within seconds, the sun shines and it's like it's never been. And that's what the Bible says our lives are like. We're here for a moment and then it's like you've never been. Gone. God is eternal, but after a moment, we are gone. And why is that? Verse 7 and 8. For we are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. It is God's anger at our sin that results in the brevity of life. It is God's anger at our sin that results in the brevity of life. God had warned Adam and Eve. God warns all of us through his scriptures. In Romans, Paul says, the wages of sin is death. And that's why our lives are short. Verse 9 and 10. All our days pass away under your wrath. Our years come to an end like a sigh. The length of our days is 70 years or 80, if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Now remember Moses got these people. He's wandering through the wilderness. For them, it didn't have to be this way. God had brought them out of the land of slavery, like he said he would. They had seen him do amazing things, miraculous things that just blew them away. They were going from Egypt to the promised land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And the spies had gone into the land and brought back some of the fruit of the land. It was beautiful. It was desirable. Why would you not want to be there? And it was going to take about 2 weeks, that's how long it should have taken to go from here to there. And yet they spent 40 years going in circles. Why? Because they failed to trust and obey. For there's no other way but to trust and obey. They had seen God do amazing things, and yet they chose to reject him, to live without him, to ignore him, to question him, to test him, but not to trust him and not to obey him. If they had, things would have turned out so much, so differently. It didn't have to be like that for them, if only they had trusted and obeyed. But what is life for all of us without God? What is life for all of us without the Lord? Look at our world. in turmoil in so many ways. Turn on your TV, there's another shooting. It's more violence. It's more hatred. There's more uncertainty. There's more. And yet, if we were to turn to God who made this world and who loves us, he could make it a land flowing with milk and honey, and yet we choose to reject him, many of us. Refuse to listen to him, think we know better, think we can do better than he can. It doesn't have to be this way, but it is because of our foolishness. So Moses asks a question, verse 11. Who knows the power of your anger? For your wrath is as great as the fear that is due you. Who knows the power of your anger? In other words, even though the wrath of God is the kind of leading question in all our world, we fail to consider that or to live in the consequences of that or to change our ways. God says, I'm angry at your sin. If you didn't sin, if you changed your ways, if you came to me, I wouldn't be angry and you wouldn't go through this turmoil. And we know that. The Psalm tells us that. The Bible tells us that. And yet the world will say, we don't want to know. We'll do it our own way. And that is what these people in the wilderness did. They rejected him, and so they were left wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. And every member of that generation who left Egypt, almost all of them, died. And it was a new generation that was to enter the promised land. So even though we know it's to do with our sin, and God is angry at our sin, the world fails to change its ways because of it. But God doesn't want our lives simply to end in failure or in death. For who knows the power of your anger? Who does know? Can you measure it? Can I measure it? Can anybody measure it? Who knows? The only one that really knows is the one who took on the wrath of God, who took on our sin, became sin for us, was a substitute for us. Only Jesus knows the full extent of that wrath, of the seriousness of sin. And that is what we remember when we remember what Jesus did when we have communion. Only he really knows. So as he hung on that cross and became sin for us to offer us a way out of our sin, to open a door out of this mess into his beauty, only Jesus really knows. And only Jesus can give us life, and he offers it to us. Because without him, we simply stumble in the darkness. And so Moses ends with a prayer. He prays for three things. He prays for a change in attitude. Verse 12. So teach us to count our days that we may gain a wise heart. Teach us to count our days. The Bible tells us, Proverbs tells us, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And that's what Moses is praying for. Make us wise. And how are we wise? We're wise whenever we respect God, when we trust him and obey him. That's the wisest thing we can do. Do you remember Jesus told a story about a farmer who was very successful and he built many barns to put all his stuff in and he was going to relax and enjoy life. And Jesus said, that person was a fool. Why? Because he neglected God. He rejected God. He thought he had it made. When he didn't. And Jesus said that night his life was demanded of him. And then where was he? Give us wisdom. Teach us to count our days that we may gain a wise heart. So he prays for a change of attitude. He also prays for a change of experience in verse 14. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, so that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, and for as many years as we have seen trouble. Satisfy us. He prays that God will teach us. Then he prays that God will satisfy us. Let our experience be different from this bitterness, from this pain, from this toil, from this purposeless night life. Then finally he prays for change of prospects, verse 16. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. So they have seen many deeds. They have seen God do many wonderful works. But they so easily forgot and so quickly rejected him. But the greatest work that God has ever done is when he came to us as his son and hung on that cross and took our sin and opened a doorway into heaven so that we could know him and be rescued by him. And this is what he offers to us. This is his work. He says, follow me, take life, accept it. Don't simply stumble around in the wilderness, because life without God is a wilderness, whether we realize it or not. Might seem great at the time, like the farmer. Life is great, I'm doing well. I'll build bigger barns, I'll have a wonderful life. I'll do this and do that and go here and go there. But it's simply a wandering in the wilderness with all its pain and patheticness. When God says, come to me, follow me, trust me, and you will be satisfied. Because he loves us with this unfailing love, a love that you cannot measure, a love that is big, a love that encompasses everyone. And there's nothing too big for him or too small for him. There's no sin too small or too big that we cannot be forgiven of if we simply trust him and follow him. Finally, verse 17. This is Moses' prayer for his people, but also our prayer for ourselves and our world. May the favor of the Lord our God rest upon us. Establish the work of our hands. Yes, establish the work of our hands. May the favor of the Lord our God rest upon us. The last couple of weeks, Sism was on, and I had the privilege of doing devotions two of the days. Do you remember one of the days, Matthew? I had a nappy. And it was Billy's nappy. Has he got any spare nappies with him today? Haven't got the nappy. But the whole point of that was, Matthew, can you remember what I talked about that day? Oh, look up your notes. It's okay. The whole purpose was, just like Billy, Billy can do nothing. Billy's beautiful. And Frank, there's little Frank at the back as well. Look, he's gorgeous. He's sitting there so good. But you know, Frank's a bit of a bore. He can't do anything. Billy can't do anything. He can't dress himself. He can't feed himself. He can't go for a walk. He can't play games. He can't do anything. Totally dependent on their parents. Totally dependent on the one who loves them to do everything for him. And so the point in the schism thought, and the whole point of this psalm, is that we are totally dependent on God. Thank you. We are completely dependent. And I keep mentioning John chapter 15, verse 5, where Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. And that is true for all of us. We might be talented. We might be popular, we might be rich, we might be a million and one things. But without the Lord in our lives, we are wandering in the wilderness when he offers us the promised land. When he wants to take away our mayfly kind of existence and be children of the living God and be with him forever. Isn't that amazing? But we are totally dependent on Him. We cannot do it ourselves. It's impossible. We can simply trust and obey. Trust the one who is faithful, the one who loves, and the one who offers us eternity. We're going to sing a lovely song that is a faithful one. We're going to use it as a prayer. We'll just remain seated to sing it. But this is our prayer to Him, our recognition that we need Him, that He is our rock, and that in Him we have all we need.